Welcome, honorable members. Welcome, of Transport. Welcome, Arcea. Welcome, to this meeting. We had a very intensive, lovely, challenging yesterday, which has been very educational to us as members. And we hope that we will proceed along the way of being informed. You participated in the skills, your presentation has made nominations to go along the way in terms of inputting as our work as the legislature. We are looking forward to hearing from the presentation and like yesterday, our problem is the effect that you said to me of presentation, and once you have presented, the members will engage with your presentation in terms of discussing them, clarifying questions, and then we will proceed from there. Without wasting time, let me quickly say I'm Gideon Mabati, the honorable member with the black and white jacket is Honorable Sibande. Next to him we've got Honorable Hadebe. Next to Honorable Hadebe we've got Honorable Ramasakan. Next to Honorable Ramasakan we've got Honorable Kelko. At the extreme we've got Honorable Fusinga. The other three members, one who's got water is Honorable Mulauzi. And then for Honorable Maswanga, I need to also give his cup of tea. As the presenter of Kencom will introduce your team so that you are able to know who you are talking to. Welcome once more, and then let me outline to yourself for this Kencom to present the portfolio. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. Before I introduce our delegation, I'd just like to thank you very much for the invitation to be here today and to present our submission. And as you know, thank you very much for your ongoing feedback and appreciation. And as you all know, we are from Hancom. We are a private company in South Africa. I am the managing director. My name is Laurie. To the right of me is Kevin. He is one of the shareholders of the business. And to the left of me is Sandra. She's senior management within our organization. Before we start, I'm not sure if many of you know who Kencom is, and possibly a bit surprising having a private entity presenting here today. But we're coming in from a slightly different angle in that we deal with R2 and the Criminal Procedure Act credit fines on a day-to-day basis in representing the fines on behalf of our clients. We represent the RV car rental and fleet industries in South Africa, equating to approximately 200,000 vehicles within their fleet, and managing over 50,000 traffic fines and infringements a month. In the 9 years since we began the company, we identified shortfalls with our clients and spent a lot of time and money in improving their systems to ensure that the correct offender can be identified. Because at the end of the day, the main idea of R2, which we are in full agreement of, is to promote road safety and to decrease our road death toll. From the outset, we'd like to make it known that we are a massive advocate of R2. We believe it's a phenomenal system. It's implemented and rolled out in the manner that we believe it can be. It will be an amazing system and will be the right way to go in curbing our road death toll. As your likes of Christina are your IT experts for the nature system, so we are the experts for IT systems for the people that we represent. Having over R1 billion worth of traffic fines since inception, and in both the laws of the Criminal Procedure Act as well as in the R2 Act, we believe that we are talking from a position of strength and knowledge, and once again, of massive promoters of the R2 Act. We have been forced to study both acts just to get a greater understanding of the liability of such and also where the liability of traffic fines should ultimately fall. With the current magisterial in the country and issuing credit cards, either via their service providers or within their own system, we are left with a difficult set of rules and different legal interpretations for each municipal district. This is one very important reason why we advocate the R2 Act. It needs to be on a centralized system. We all need to have a clear understanding of the regulation, and there needs to be one set of rules on how the Act and regulations are interpreted. Unfortunately, currently all Criminal Procedure Acts fine. Each municipal district interprets the law in whichever manner unfortunately suits them at that moment in time. We have a lot of difficulties in nominating fines to the correct offender. We have a lot of difficulty in getting to correct public prosecutors and having our cases heard. Why do we believe we can sit here today from a position of knowledge? As you can see, we deal with approximately 50,000 infringement notices and fines on a monthly basis. That equates to 36.7 million rand per month. Just to give a bit of history on R2 alone, this does not include Criminal Procedure Act fines. Since inception, our system alone has received 748,433 R2 infringement notices through our system. When I refer to our system, it's an internally built system developed to talk to our client systems as well as having the capabilities of talking to the likes of an e-matrix system, etc. The system allows us to have a full audit trail of all infringement notices at any stage of what we have on our system, so if there's any questions or queries in the future, we have the answers. The 748,433 notices equates to 549,410,704 rand of R2 liability. Of that, you'll see on the table the total redirected, and we split it into total redirected being South African drivers. So that is offenders with a South African ID number, name, and residential address. Is 475,471 infringements to a value of 339,467,941 rand. Total in passport, different to your conversation you were having yesterday regarding the SADC countries, this is predominantly internationals that have flown into the country from the like of Europe, Asia, Australia, etc. They hold international driver permits and licenses. And we refer to them as international foreigners. It's 19,103 R2 infringement notices, equating to 62,878,609 rand. The last category is other, which is 182,859 infringements at a value of 147,064,154 rand value. Other is including the 4024 infringement notices that were withdrawn by the JPD due to the irregular submissions of them to the public. And a massive issue that we also experience is cloned number plates. So these are infringement notices that have cloned number plates and are incorrectly issued to our clients. That just shows you exactly what I just stated, but in graph format of the quantity of fines received and how many of them could be redirected. That graph and the graph that I have mentioned to you shows that all the infringement that we have received on our system could have either been redirected to an international driver or to a South African offender. The unfortunate reality is that a very, very, very small percentage of that has actually been redirected to the correct offender. If I have to put an outstanding liability for all of my clients now from the e-matrix system, I can guarantee you that the majority of that will still be outstanding on our client's name. Bearing in mind, I go back to what do our clients do? They are in the car rental industry. Therefore, they rent vehicles to people. In terms of the NATIS law, you have to have a nominated property within your organization in which to register vehicles. So all R2 infringements will be issued in the name of the property representative for that company. From there, all R2 infringements are then redirected out of the property's name into the correct offender's name. This is unfortunately where we hit a massive stumbling block. is the nominations are not happening. A proxy cannot possibly be held liable for over 100 to 2,000 offences occurring in one day on his name. Just within itself, it's impossible to drive that amount of vehicles in one day. So it brings us to why is the liability still outstanding in our client's name? Why are they not being nominated to the correct offender? Why are the offenders not changing their driver behavior? Why are we not collecting the monies of the R2 infringement? And it boils down to what we believe, and please understand, this is coming from an on-the-ground, hands-on perspective. We deal with these matters on a day-to-day basis, and these are the ongoing issues that we experience, and would love to, in this forum, hopefully find a solution to these issues. Firstly, is the administrative failure. Having a Venetian system, it is an electronic system, it's very little manual intervention, and therefore it's a very effective system. Unfortunately, with the R2 Act still being relatively manual process in the issuing of the R2 filings and submissions of such, a lot of paperwork needs to be presented, which we do. We submit on a weekly basis to the Johannesburg Metro as well as the Swanee Metro. They firstly are receiving massive volume from us due to the efficiency within our systems of being able to identify the drivers. Therefore, I don't believe they have the administrative capacity to manage volume. Secondly, the requirement of submission of an R207 is ever changing. The R2 Act currently makes provision for the issuing authorities to, for lack of a better description, make the rules in what they believe will satisfy them for a nomination to be successfully redirected to the correct offender. When a question has been posed to both Johannesburg Metro and the Swanee Metro on why a copy of an ID book or a copy of the rental agreement is required, neither of them can give us a sufficient answer. We do understand that there have been companies that do provide false information. Please understand that the level of where we're at and the companies that we represent in South Africa are part of the JSE, part of the Tourism Board, part of the Vehicle Renting Associations. There is no way that they would, from their fiduciary duties, present false information. In the 8 years that we have been doing this and over the billion rand worth of fines that we have been presented with and administered, we have not had one case that has been taken to court in which an offender has said that we have incorrectly redirected a traffic fine to him. What is the impact of not redirecting the infringement to the correct offender? Your habitual offenders are never held liable. We can give you a list of drivers who are habitual offenders. This brings to increased lawlessness, ongoing accidents, and the road deaths increased caused by speeding and lawlessness. Our national road safety figures ever negatively increasing. Low or non-collection of infringement monies are induced lawlessness. And once again, the ever-increasing road death toll. We have obviously identified issues in the administration of the R2 Act. And the latest or last amendment bill firstly brings to mind the issue of the R2 infringement notices and the proposal of sending via an SMS system. An SMS system is a simple system in that people change their cell phone numbers on a regular basis. Secondly, if you had to send all infringements on a representative of a company to an SMS on their cell phone would shut down, literally, due to the extensive volume. Unfortunately, with SMS, there's no proof of delivery, and in the mind of our offenders, they'll just say, well, we never received our notice. Therefore, we don't believe that the SMS system would be sufficient, especially from a company perspective. The next issue is the timelines imposed by the R2 Act. We understand through the manual submissions that there are timelines. We are also doing electronic nominations via the eNatus system in a test basis with the eNatus and HTCMA team. Unfortunately, the timelines imposed, they are also a bit vague. Clarity is required then. The interpretation of the R2 Act and regulations by the issuing authorities. We've had the pilot running and R2 running in the Swanee and the Joburg metropolitan areas. That's only two of the hundreds that we have in the country. And already, just between those two, there are two differing interpretations of the Act. If we allow each issuing authority to have their own interpretation of the Act and regulation, it is going to be an administrative disaster. The inability to manage the volumes of auto infringements issued, once again, this is very much on the manual system. Unfortunately, the Johannesburg Metro and the Shwani Metro do not seem to have the capacity to deal with the notices. The irregular requirements to achieve a successful nomination on an R207. As it stands right now, neither the Johannesburg Metro nor the Shwani Metro are receiving and accepting our R207 nominations. They are rejecting every single one of them. The reason for the rejection is that we do not submit a copy of the rental agreement from the company to the Johannesburg Metro. This is for a variety of reasons. The information that we do provide on our R207 is the latest information from the ITC database in the country. It is the latest information given to our clients by their clients at the time of rental. We do not submit R207 if all the required information is not provided for. Secondly, the rental agreements contain a lot of private information of private individuals and companies. They have their credit card details on there, as well as a lot of information of the car rental industry. We have unfortunately had a few cases in the past where this information has been shared across clients via the Metro and has unfortunately created a few issues. So for that reason, the rental agreement cannot be submitted. Upon questioning both the Johannesburg Metro and the Shwani Metro on why they require a copy of the rental agreement and ID copy, they cannot give us an answer. Once again, we do understand that there are companies that have submitted false information in the past. I want to again reiterate, and we'll happily put it in an affidavit, that none of our information is manually adjusted, is electronically submitted, and it is 100% correct. Non-compliance of, as our R207s are not being dealt with, we have to manage the liability of our clients in a manner. We are then forced to issue R210, which is an election to be tried in court to the relevant authorities. According to the R2 Act, on receiving an R210 election to be tried in court, you are immediately meant to cancel the R203, which is the infringement notice, and if you wish to proceed with that matter, issue a summons for that offender to appear in court. To date, we have submitted 745,972 R210 elections to be tried in court. We have not received one R203 cancellation, and we have not received one summons to appear in court. This once again brings us back to the offences. The liability still remains in our client's name. Unlawful enforcement orders are being issued against the auto infringement. Once again, an enforcement order can only be issued against an auto infringement if the relevant authority is satisfied that there are no outstanding representations or nominations on a particular matter. We only become aware of enforcement orders when we arrive at the EMASIS offices to renew our vehicle licenses, only to be told that you cannot renew your vehicle license due to an outstanding enforcement order. The client is then sitting in a quandary as they cannot allow their vehicle on the road and it is an unlicensed vehicle, they will be breaking the law. At last port of call, we are then forced to pay under duress. They have to pay the outstanding enforcement orders, the amount of the infringement notice and any courtesy letters that have been issued to get an enforcement order uplifted simply to get their vehicle licensed and registered and back on the road. We don't believe that this is the right manner because, once again, the actual offender is getting away. Problems in having receiving auto infringements in the past is the post office strike. Unfortunately, we do have the experience of strike in our country. We don't receive all our auto infringements. We therefore rely heavily on an electronic system or obtaining the R114s from the issuing authorities or the EMASIS department to see what outstanding liability is actually on our client's name. unfortunately, we cannot give you a figure on those because there is no system that actually agrees with the next system. I can put an R11 board today and I can go onto the R2.gov website, and unfortunately, they're not the same. We believe that either electronic systems and receipt of infringement notices via an electronic system would be the most efficient for the R2 Act moving forward. Once again, please may I reiterate that we are talking from a position of company, fleet, and the volume. I believe individuals can possibly be managed separately. Email would be acceptable, provided that there is some delivery notification system. A very big issue with infringement notices is being able to prove that they were firstly issued and secondly that they were received. That will always indicate when the timelines of R2 actually start. Another extremely big issue in the elimination of R2O3s is that there's no provisions at all in the R2 Act for offences incurred by international drivers or drivers with international passport details. Currently on the Criminal Procedure Act, we will submit our reactions to the relevant authority and those all get cancelled. Therefore, no international driver is held liable whatsoever for any offences occurred within South Africa. Within the R2 Act, there is unfortunately no system for these, and therefore we are still standing on our client's name. Additional documentation and identification is required for these nominations, as previously mentioned. And once again, the volume is an issue. Having already mentioned, the issuing authorities, and I'm only talking about the two that are currently running R2, are already different in their requirements. Up until 4 months ago, the Johannesburg Metro were redirecting on our R2O7 with no problem whatsoever. And the next day, changed their minds. We unfortunately have this ongoing issue, and where an agreement is reached, we have the agreement in writing, and then the next day, unfortunately, has changed. As I said, R2O10s are our last resort at getting these infringements managed. But this system is unfortunately not working. Please understand, we have no desire for these infringement notices to be sent into summonses. We know the court would not possibly manage that volume should all these notices be issued in summons date. The public prosecutors would be inundated, we would never get to court, and it would be an absolute disaster. The Criminal Procedure Act allows a proxy or a person of law to provide an affidavit to the court either stating that they were not the driver of the vehicle at the time of the event, or we can provide an ID number and a name of the actual offender, and the magistrate will accept that and remove the liability from the client's name. This is not how the system should be run, because once again, the fines are not being redirected, they are merely being cancelled, the offender is not being held liable, and this is once again coming to court, as magistrate now has to deal with a minor offence. If the system just works, it will never get to that stage. No summonses are being issued on the R210, so we cannot take the matters to court. A public prosecutor will not look at any matter unless it's in the state of a summons. We cannot take an R203 to them. They refuse to deal with it. Therefore, our hands are tied. I think you would agree with us that the client cannot tell the client that they are not liable for, and where they can prove, beyond doubt, that they are not the driver of their vehicle. It may all sound like doom and gloom, but please, we come here with solutions as well. And when we propose our solution, please understand that once again, we're talking from ground level on dealing with this on a day-to-day basis. As mentioned, the issuing of the art infringement notices, individuals, we propose the registered mail system, and as a backup, possibly email or SMS due to our ongoing postal strikes. Companies with fleets, we believe an electronic notification would be the best way to work. We've already run tests with the eNatus system on our systems, and it can work. We just need to fine it up a little bit. If email is the route chosen, there needs to be some form of delivery receipt and order tail that an email was sent out and was successfully received on the offender's side. We also need to have a monthly electronic file, which will have all notices contained in there for our clients on a monthly basis. This is simply as a backup to ensure that our clients are being made aware of everything that is on their name. As once again I've mentioned, there are many notices that we don't find out about until it comes to the enforcement order stage. The timeline imposed by the R2 Act, we believe that the payment of R2 fines should be made slightly easier for the individual. For companies, we need to increase the time allowed to identify who the offender is and submit accordingly. And I only say this simply because we need to address the timeline imposed and when do they actually start and finish within the R2 Act. We need to enable electronic nominations as well via electronic services, either web services, .sep or CSV files. We can work in any electronic format. We need to ensure full audit trials and results files to confirm that notices have been sent to the correct offender. It's like sending information to one system and then not getting a response if they were successful or not. We believe there should be a standing operating procedure that the Competition Authority must follow with regards to the R2 Act. Unfortunately, as it currently is, by allowing the issuing authorities to interpret the Act in which manner they choose, will form a disaster in the future. The volume of R2 infringement issues is also an issue. You should allow the individual to submit documentation by email, having to hand deliver to the relevant issuing authority is once again a logistical nightmare. And companies with fleets should be able to do nominations via electronic means. The regular requirement to achieve a successful nomination on R207 need to reduce the requirement on the nomination. Currently, the R2 Act stipulates that an R2 needs to contain a certain amount of information regarding the vehicles, the offender, the offense details. However, if the R2 does not contain that information, and we submit an R2 also with information missing simply because we did not have it, it is rejected. The fleet companies in the license of Africa are well respected and listed companies. They will not submit false information. They have fiduciary duties as listed companies to ensure all information is valid and not altered. Non-compliance of the R2 10 submitted and received by the issuing authorities under the R2 IA. As mentioned previously, all R2 notices must be cancelled upon receipt of an R2 10. Of the 345,000 R that we have submitted, no R2s have been cancelled and we have not received any summons to deal with in court. The generic point system, once again, we believe is a good system. It needs to be managed correctly. There should be separate systems for individuals and for company proxies. If the operator cards or the proxies, driver licenses or the company cards are cancelled, any effective business will come to a complete standstill. Repeat offenders will continue to drive recklessly as they are being held accountable for their actions. And should the R2 notices remain in the name of the company or the proxy representative, the incorrect offender is being held liable and companies will come to a standstill. As mentioned, the Act is committed to make R2 success. We believe it is the best proposed system in South Africa. We have one of the biggest death tolls in the entire world on off-road accidents. And the only way to change this and reduce this is to change driver behaviour. This can only be achieved by the relevant authorities, government departments and stakeholders of R2 to understand our day-to-day issues experienced and allow the likes of Hancock to engage with them on the system that we're working. We thank you for our presentation today. We thank you for listening to us. We are opening up to any questions that we will gladly answer. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. Zoya, the presentation has been made to us. Let's engage the presentation. Honorable Ramasaka, nice to see your hand. Honorable Malawi, please. Let's stop there. Honorable Ramasaka.
you very much. Our honor would share and thanks to the Concom just a few questions for me to understand. The issue about the nomination, nominated by Ron Feinberg. I think that if you represent, like you're saying, you represent a big kind of company hires, pays the rest. In their normal contract they enter into, they signed with an individual with all the details on there. Now, when the nomination of a driver, in fact, some of them, they would say that you're signing for this, if anything happens in the car or improvement of this, this is what you're going to be liable for. In the agreement, when you're handing your car, they tell you that any infringement and they would deduct X amount of money from your credit card. Now this is the arrangement that an individual driver entering into contract with the car hire enters into. Now what I want to understand is your problem with the nomination issue. The foundation of the nomination of a driver happens at the principal agreement. So why is it a problem? Then I'm just, I'm not finished. You can make a choice.
Sorry.
So I just want to understand correctly why is it you have a problem with it? Why is it a problem? Because the other, you see, the problem is not so much about the act. It's a problem of the client in compliance, or they complying with what they have to comply. It sounds like a reluctancy from the client to comply and then put a blame into Arthur, to say the Arthur, but not us. Now, we do mention the issue about the mutual company, listed company, the information they submit will be not false, it will be correct information. If the information is already existing in the foundation again, why is it a problem for submission of that? Why is some degree of latency? Because the issue here, you don't need the credit card details. The important part is that there is a contract that has been entered into. So, if you go to ABUS, they give you this contract that you can sign collateral. Sometimes you just find out from your problem, day experience, what is the problem with that? The second question that I just want to understand from you is the issue about what do you call it? You call it enforcement order, and the problem with enforcement order that your clients are staying under arrest. I think that's the language you use if I'm allowed to quote it. Now, all South Africans, including myself and members of parliament, have to comply with the provision of matters, including the enforcement order. If you have failed to take care of your insurance, pay your fine, when you renew your license, they pull the fines and they say, you know what, we have outstanding fines. And these are the fines that you must pay before you uplift your this or your license. Now, everybody that has committed the acts has forgotten maybe to pay. There's many things that you do and forget to pay. You are reminded when you come to issue your license or renew your license. Now, that all of us get affected by it. It's a modus operandi that happens. Why is it a problem for clients? Why is it you have to do it under your guest? Because if your client is paying, to comply with certain provisions. You can't crack out and say my client has now been is now paid under arrest and all this. That's the second thing. I just want to hear you spoke about internet. and the fact that those are cancelled, they don't pay any back, therefore. What is your view, given that we haven't said anything on that provision, where you think we should include a provision in this that makes law prohibitory for a spot fine, or find that before you leave the airport when you're entering your passport, you also have to send your standing fine if you are not from South Africa? Did you say anything about that? Up to 3 out of 10, the discussion that you have about 700,000 that you said. In the election to go to court by you as you represent your plan, given what you say, the paper has made with me a preamble about that, why you end up there. Is it not based on the knowledge that with the current capacity of court, your client is likely not going to be heard in the next 10 years? And therefore, it's a rather long thing that at the end, your client not pay the money that's supposed to be paid because they're waiting for the court, and of course, the list, the number of figures that they're making are not necessarily going to see the light of day now in our lifetime. Is that not a operational strategy for you that you understand the system? Because you know that if you have to go to court, there's a dead end. Now that you say you support ASO, is it not a problem at the front end where you're supposed to sort out with your plan? And therefore then you alleviate the burden at the end of that 700,000 fines are supposed to. So I'm just asking you a question. It sounds to me that in 9 years you also learn the ropes. So you know what works and what could work, and therefore, so you advise your client that this case, this one, and of course, you may even submit your election to go to court at the 5 o'clock that night on the day of the day left. You just go and say, I intend to go to court on the day, and knowing very well that you have now thrown the sun in the wheel, so to speak. So I'm just asking if you could, and I like the emphasis that you like to see afterwards. So share that. Then on that issue, the ARTO Act proposed a different method. You didn't quite speak onto that. The issue about minimizing the election to go to court, to the representation issues. You didn't quite say anything to that. Maybe if you could just comment, because I think it will alleviate much of your problems that you're having in terms of relation to other technical or the other countries. The representation will alleviate that problem. So those are the only few questions for this.
Thanks for the presentation. I have only two questions of here which I make from the presentation. One is like, you mentioned that there is an interpretation of proactive regulations by the. You said that the different interpretation. I presume you are talking about China. So that the interpretation is different. So maybe can we go a little bit deeper and try to cite some examples from this day up here so that we understand. Because we don't want to see after the whole out of the whole 200-something municipality in the country to find different 200 the interpretation of the African regulation should be a disaster. So can you cite some examples or if you have is there anything like to share to affect them so that they can align the correct interpretation of the article with the trade? So we also
also mentioned about the lease agreement contract. I think if you are applying to the driver, you said it's like you can't have a lease. I just wanted to know what it's for, this agreement needed by the issue of the committee of the court or the issue officer of the representation to the actual, and what is the reason of this agreement, and why are you not availing it? Don't you trust, is it a sign of not trusting the issue officer of the issue of it? So that you can't have a business contract. And you also mentioned the timeline company to solve for the time they might start for the adversary. So for how long, or how many, how long time do you want for the company? The company suggestions, because remember this timeline legislation. So for either direction, for at least for how long do the company still need to access your system?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairman.
I've just listened to the presentation, but I didn't listen to it. It seems to be a kind of animosity between the department and business, if you like. And that's concerned, but there seems to be kind of mistrust and an obstructionist attitude. That's a bit of this could unpack that. I'm sure that there's animosity for both sides, so I'm not saying it's one or the other, but it doesn't lead to very healthy enforcement of the system and so forth. Is it something that perhaps as a commission to consider and look at? Is it a problem that perhaps there are officials who don't understand their situation well enough, or that business doesn't understand the product? Just unpack that, because it does concern me that if you make it the end, a great product, an auto, a new auto act, and yet in reality it's not going to work, because all this has to be managed and run by your people. And if the attitude and mindset is incorrect, then there's a problem there. So perhaps you could just unpack that a little bit more, tell us, just in my perspective.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to also thank you to the depot in your presentation. But nevertheless, what to say sometimes. Chairperson, you know, when they start to introduce their presentation, they spoke about their intentions to promote and then also to increase their tone. That is my understanding when they present. But as their presentation goes on and on, somehow I find it a bit strange or like to put this question to just clarify us. That where is the initial problem? Is the problem with the mechanism for capacity for collection of the prisoners? Or is it considering the lack of capacity with the institution supposed to do a collection of the prisoners? Thirdly, or is the challenge with the act itself? Is that what the problem? You know why it's the question? Because in their presentation, they presented to us that the company came for representing their clients, they gave us the statistics of their clients, so I can't understand. Or is it the complaint itself? make sure the achievements of your goals of promoting yourself safely in the ghetto, that it seems your company is different, like it fits with the company, I say, but a lot of it, like, they indicated that in court, they have proved without your doubts that some of them do not continue driving with that sort of etc. But if we can say that as of now, we remain in the law that if any pattern from negative things, anything wrong, we must impound these or heads of how we're going to take it like that. Because there's a rat somewhere. And there's a thing which is worrying this loading of some of things. I don't know why this country is so turning off some of things, and I'm so thinking it's so turning off some of things. Because to me, turning off some of things, it also involves criminal acts, whereby people will turn their numbers with the intention maybe you might go for a robot or whatever. With the turning off some of things, what is it here? Because for us, it's a serious offense. We need not, and if you get some specifics, I don't know whether you represent them as well, because it came from your report, you spoke about the killing of numbers. Again, the same person, there was a place where she also indicated about two metros, which is China and for this day, when she said there was no capacity. Where is the problem? China doesn't have capacity for this. And then also, you see, looking at why I ask you, there is a business in this that maybe your institution itself is also not written by or masking the whatever the authorities in some of the institutions, knowing where they were that they don't have the time or whatever to sort them out. Because my question would be, why do you wait so much up until the number of these prisoners are so easy, like a hip, before you take them to what else? Why are you waiting? What's also your safety to make sure that the systems are being looking at the government? They are not functioning. And then, again, I was listening to her when they were doing some proposals, She spoke about the male system and electronics and females and monthly electronic price. I mean, from the old proposal. So, this one linked to the question which I've raised earlier on, that where is the problem? Because you can do this proposal. As long as there are challenges with the compliance, or as long as there are challenges with the institution who's failing to collect the evidence, whether you do take these proposals or not, the status quo will remain the same. So I'll request some clarity on those ones. Well, last one there is the same. You still get something about why offenders are not changing their driving. I wouldn't pick up exactly what you were saying about. Because our intention, maybe, is also to get an amicable solution how to get it right.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chairman. Thank you all honourable.
that on the rental agreement of rental company, the... just regard to your questions, please also accept input from Kevin on my right, as he is also very knowledgeable in this matter. Firstly, you mentioned that with the rental agreement that you signed, that in the fine print, and there's a lot of fine print, and yes, you do sign a lot of stuff, is that they make provision for any offences that are committed whilst driving their vehicles, and that they take that money off your credit card, and therefore, in your mind, believe that that money should be paid across for any offences by a company. Please now just correct you in that idea. They do not state on the rental agreement that they will pay for any offences committed. They may not pay on behalf of anybody on the R2 or the Criminal Procedure Act. It is still in the name of the company. You cannot admit guilt on somebody else's behalf by paying a traffic fine that is not in your name. The likes of the companies, secondly, do not take money on credit cards for this. There is an administration charge for any offences that might be committed, simply because these companies do have admin departments that need to manage fines, but they cannot pay for fines that are committed by their drivers, as this is admitting guilt on someone else's behalf, and it's also not giving the driver the opportunity to appear in court or defend himself if he does not believe that he's guilty of that offence. Your second question was the submission of the rental agreement and why is this such a problem. Just one of the companies that we represent do over 200,000 vehicle rentals a month. Of those 200,000 vehicle rentals a month that they do, they will receive approximately 5,000 to 8,000 R2 traffic fines against those rentals. To submit rentals that are unfortunately not in their system but manually filed, and to sign the correct rental agreement and attach it to the R207, especially then to the administrative difficulty. Secondly, as previously mentioned, it does contain private information, and it's not a fact of a trust issue. It's the fact that it had happened before, and also on questioning as the JNTD and the TNTD on why do you require that information or why do you require a copy of the rental agreement, they have not been able to give us an answer. We have arrived at the JNTD on numerous occasions and had meetings with them and asked why our nomination not being managed, only to find boxes of R207 sitting in their offices not having been dealt with.
Sorry, Jeff, I can just fill in the gaps as we go along, because I can hear there's a bit of a misunderstanding of what the presentation is supposed to bring across. The problem with the R207 is not that the R207 is filled in incorrectly or there's missing information on it from our side, and we deliver them to the issuing authorities to do the redirection to the correct offender's name. It's the fact that the issuing authorities continuously change the goalposts. Today they want this, tomorrow they want that. So you can't keep up to pace with what they want. And what do? They put the R207 in boxes and leave them under the table, but they don't redirect them. That's why we're saying the correct offender is not being held liable. We do stick to the R2 regulation. We do follow the laws to the T. But the issuing authority chooses not to do the nomination for whatever reason they have. And this comes back to a point that I'm going to make. Is yes, there is animosity because the biggest problem here is that the CANCOM does not issue fines. We don't issue the traffic fines. We just deal with fines that are issued by the service providers of issuing authorities. We don't issue traffic fines. So we don't hold traffic fines back. We deal them as we receive them on the date and time in the specific time frames of R2.
We stick to the South as a Austrian vehemently. But the immigration authorities choose not to re-elect the traffic fine. Then it goes to an enforcement order. And then we look at the enforcement order on the order shall impart. Now we followed all the steps that have been followed on that process. But an enforcement order blocks our clients from registering their vehicles. That's the problem that we're talking about here today. That's the administrative failure that we're talking about. And then we try and engage with the authorities regularly. We send mails, we start speak to them, start speak to RKA, we try to speak to the RTNC to go sit with them to find a workable solution and find out why are they not redirecting these nominations. And we get the answers. So what is the last thing for us to do? Then we have to issue an RTN to go to court to be tried to prove to the court that we were not the driver. We are not guilty of this offense. We have given you the information. We have followed all the regulations to the T, but the authorities elect not to deal with it. Thank you. That's all I need to tell you now.
On your question regarding the enforcement orders and the quote of paying under duress, yes, you were correct in that quote, sir. The clients do pay under duress, and the reason why we say it's under duress is first back to the original auto infringement, where they can prove that they were not the driver of the vehicle at the time of the offence. They have given the information to the relevant authorities to ensure that their auto nomination and auto fine is sent to the correct offender, so that the correct offender can pay for that infringement notice. And the fact of the matter that administrative function is not happening, the auto entries are not being redirected to the correct offender, leads us to having to pay for that fine as duress simply because they need to get their vehicles on the road again or else their businesses will come to a complete standstill. I have to mention that an enforcement order should only be issued against an R2 infringement provided that the authority is satisfied that there are no outstanding nominations or representations against that particular matter. This unfortunately does not happen. We comply with R2, we comply with nominations, we comply with providing the information. What more can we do when we are faced with an enforcement order and we need to get our vehicle back on the road, or else tourism will come to a standstill in South Africa? If fleets cannot license their vehicles, they cannot rent vehicles out to people who travel, to international tourists, their businesses will come to a complete standstill. Tourism will come to a complete standstill within South Africa because these future companies that I am talking about are law-abiding companies. They will not put an unlicensed vehicle on the road. Hence, an enforcement order is paid under duress. With regards to the international drivers, firstly, I mentioned the Criminal Procedure Act that these are cancelled, and you asked for a proposal on how do we handle these? We believe that they can be managed. If you travel to Europe and you incur a traffic fine while traveling in Europe, you either get stopped at the airport to pay that fine, or before re-entering that country again on another trip, you are not allowed in until you pay that fine. South Africa can do something very similar. I'm going to put over to Kevin on his suggestion on international drivers.
Thank you very much, Speaker. The basic suggestion we have is one I think the Honourable Minister has alluded to, that we can place, if we get the systems to work with them, we can place at point of exit redesign to read alternative database stroke a centralized database, maybe from a CANCOM database or an e-native database or a Criminal Procedure Act database, that we can centralize the database at point of departure if the traffic fine has been issued in time. We also find the problem where traffic fines aren't issued in time. So if the offense date is day one and the traffic fine is issued in the correct time frame and the international tourist is still in the country, then we can get him at the exit and we can say, please pay your traffic fines upon exit. Because we can set up a centralized database. If we do miss him, and he's only here for a day, but he's got no offence and he's left, because the time is too short then. We can then follow up that individual two ways. One is through an SMS system which we have developed to start following up on internationals. I'm saying, on this date and time, you have received an offence, please log on to ABC's website and see the offence there, and please pay it. Or we can take this offence and list it at the embassy of the country where he comes from. So if he comes from Netherlands, we'll list him at the Dutch embassy. So if he ever wants to return, he will have this traffic violation to take care of. And that way, we can increase the revenue on internationals by 100%. Because currently there's very little international revenue coming in from traffic crimes that have been committed in South Africa. So those are the three very high-level overviews of how we can manage internationals in the country. Thank you.
Your question five was on the RTCN, the election to be held in court, and was it not perhaps an operational strategy of CANCOM and their clients to use that as a last resort, knowing that that case will never appear in court simply because no court can manage that body. We don't ever want them to get to court. We don't ever want the RTCN to be submitted and summonses to be issued, because over and above that is another administrative nightmare. If summonses are issued and you have got a proxy that needs to appear in six different courts on the same day, it's impossible. So no, we don't want it to get to that stage. And it's most certainly not a strategy by ourselves or our company that we represent. Our strategy is to get to the correct offender. Our strategy is to ensure that the R23s are taken off companies that are liable and who did not commit those offences and are issued to the correct offender. The driver who committed the offence, the driver who sped, the driver who drove 155 kilometres in 120 zone needs to know that he did wrong. He needs to know that he has a fine issued in his name and needs to pay it. If you want the likes of the car rental companies to pay these fines on behalf of their clients, driver's behavior will never change because the offender is not being held liable. They need to get the fines issued in their name. The R210, once again, is not an operational strategy from our side. It's a desperate attempt at trying to sort out the outstanding liability of R2. If the system is run the way it should be run from both the entities or all involved entities, the R203 infringements can be dealt with within a matter of hours or days. The fact that they're not, they keep going into a courtesy letter, then it's either an enforcement order or we submit an R210. We submit an R210 for a reason, because we need to get the matter sorted out. And if the file is not being nominated to the driver, what is our next port of call? You mentioned in your sixth question, is there not perhaps a front end problem? Front end from point of rental. We have invested a lot of time and money in looking at this potential issue. And when we first started the business, the percentage of redirections of the companies was a lot lower than what it is today, simply because they could not identify all of the drivers of their vehicles at the time. Those companies have invested a lot of money in improving their systems. They have introduced systems whereby they can capture all the correct details up front, and we believe that the front-end problems are not what they used to be. They have been improved. We can identify the drivers and we need to just get the R203s submitted to the correct offender. Honorable Malusi, with regards to your questions, firstly you asked for a bit more example or expansion on issuing authority and the interpretation of the R2 action regulations. We had an agreement having met with the Johannesburg Metro as the act state that the issuing authority needs to be satisfied, hence our meeting with them, and had a roundtable discussion and an agreement that they would accept our R207 in a particular manner. One of the queries was not all the information was submitted on R207. However, if the R203 did not contain that information, we obviously could not put it onto our R207 either. We came to an agreement and they were redirecting up to a point. One day we arrived with our nominations and they rejected all of them without having informed us that they had changed their minds and the requirement for a successful relation. Please understand that having agreed to one system, interpreting that and changing our system to accept that change costs money and takes a lot of time. And then being faced with another obstacle when delivering Archer again, we are faced with a time issue, having to change systems, and for no given reason. With regards to the Shawnee Metro, we have had a few issues there ourselves. They have chosen not to accept our nominations. We deliver them on a weekly basis, only for them all to be rejected, and we subsequently bring them back to our offices. We are not sure exactly why this is happening, why they choose not to redirect. I'm not sure this is the correct forum to mention this, but we have had a case of an officer at TMP who approached one of our clients and said that if you want all your enforcement orders to go away, you can pay 8,000 rand and they'll be gone off the system. He subsequently submitted an invoice from his private company with private banking details for 80,000 rand. This, we believe, is corruption, and our clients will not enter into that manner at all. And all of this can be avoided if the RTOCNs are merely related to the current agenda. Your second question is, why is rental agreement needed and by whom? It is the issuing authority that requires that information. As previously stated, the JNPD did not want that information. They were happy to accept our RTO7s, and they did for many years, only to have changed their minds. We are not sure why they require that information. Once again, it's possibly a mistrust issue, if they don't believe that the information that's being provided on the RTO7s is the genuine information contained on the rental agreement. We have submitted affidavits stating that the information is not manually altered. The information is genuine. And any offender can get queried or request to take that matter to court because they were not the offender. We will gladly provide that information within 72 hours of request. We believe there is a trust issue, and given the issuing authority have had companies submitting false information, and we do understand that. But once again, we believe that we, in our years of having done this, have proven otherwise. Your query on timelines and what do we suggest? I think the difficulty in the current form of RTO is when the timelines actually start. We understand that a registered mail letter is deemed, the timelines are deemed to have started and deemed to have been delivered after 10 days, regardless of whether the postal office strike or not, or regardless of whether that infringement is collected or not. That's your first problem, is when does that actual timeline start, because you have your 32 days thereafter, so it's called a 40 days from offence date to deal with that matter. If you only receive it on day 39, it's 2 days to nominate. With regards to the current test system that we are running with the eNATIS system, we are only allowed to nominate when that infringement notice is in the status of fleet nomination. Unfortunately, we cannot get clear timelines on when that fleet nomination status starts and ends, so it is a bit of a potluck when sending through electronic information. Honourable De Freitas, you mentioned the animosity possibly between government and business, and we agree with you. It's certainly not healthy. It's not going to help the Archer Act. And please understand that although we may come across as frustrated, it's simply because we do believe in Archer Act. And I know that has been questioned. But we do believe that the correct offender needs to be held liable. That is crucial. And the only way to sort this out is for the systems to be run smoothly, and they can be run smoothly. We have no desire to enter into unhealthy situations, disagreements, we believe this can then be sorted out around the table with the fingers going forward. Honourable Sanda, I'm sorry, Honourable Frazier's respect on your query on the animosity. If the RTA does not make provision for international drivers as mentioned previously, when we submit this question to the relevant authorities on how we manage those fines, because when RTA is rolled out correctly, when they issue to a company will be three times the RTA fine amount, they must be paid. Business does not make provision for that. They do not take the money up front or at end of rental term. Therefore, they cannot pay for those infringements. Honourable Sabanda, on your question, where you said was our intention or your belief of our intention was to improve road safety and decrease the death toll, where does the initial problem lie? Is it the collection of infringements? Do our clients perhaps not collect their infringements? Is it the lack of capacity? Is it a challenge with the act itself? Is it compliance? Where does the actual problem lie? At the moment, it's very difficult to pinpoint where the actual issue lies. R2 in its current form, issuing R2 infringements via registered mail, once again, it does work. The post office is on track. Our clients will not get notification of an R2 infringement, so they do not know that they are going there to commit. If the postal South African post office and your RTIA are not communicating with each other, then the stoppage there. I've just been whispered in my ear that one of our clients has not received, and one of our biggest clients has not received an auto infringement notice via the post for the last 4 months, which within itself is extremely condemning. As we know, the volume of rentals and the amount of store cameras in the Johannesburg metropolitan area, there's many, there's definitely an auto fine sitting somewhere, if you're not sure where. Is there a lack of capacity? This goes on to another question where you asked, do we not perhaps file up all nominations and then deliver a massive box once a month, knowing that fishing authorities won't be able to manage that? No, we don't do that. Our system has been developed to work within the timeline of R2. We deliver once or twice a week to the relevant authorities, being the Tshwane and the Johannesburg Metro. We ensure that they are managed and delivered in time of the Archer Act and believe that lack of capacity can possibly be due to the fact that you receive paperwork. Now you've got to recapture that paperwork. We provide the latest known address on the Archer 07 given to us by the client. If the address differs on the eNATIS system where this nomination is captured, the issuing authority will not take the latest known address, they will use the address provided for on the eNATIS system. That within itself is a problem. Lack of capacity again, paperwork. Why do 6 pages need to be provided with an R207 nomination form for an offence to be correctly directed to the correct offender? If all R2 fines that are issued by the authorities or the service providers are all redirected to offenders, you're going to have the call centre of people to issuing authority to manage the volume. Is the challenge with the Act itself? The Archer Act is a good Act, it just needs to be fine-tuned. Regulations need to take into consideration fleet companies. It's very much an Act for the individual, but what needs to be understood is that there are massive companies with massive fleets out there. And they are working towards, if not already, compliant with their systems, the Archer Act and the nominations of others. So we need to have the Act allow to deal with companies.
Sorry, Dr. Stephen, can I just mention on that point is for us to get a system that is going to be a workable solution for all around the table, there must be more engagement and willing engagement between all parties, meaning the RTIA, the RTHC, at the current stage, Swami and Jami Getas, we find it extremely difficult to communicate with any of these institutions and to put on the table workable solutions, communication that assists to start book every single time. Thank you.
And the mention is the compliance itself of these companies treated differently. They shouldn't be treated any differently. If they can identify who was driving their vehicles at the time of the offence, those fines should be nominated to the correct driver and the individual should be treated as for any individual in the country. If I receive an R2 fine in my personal capacity, I deal with it in my personal capacity. Each offender should have that opportunity to do the same. We have an issue of vehicles and roadblocks where your traffic officer will pull a vehicle off a road due to the number plate. And if you run that number plate through the e-nature system and it belongs to a rental fleet company, the chances of having an infringement notice of it at that given time is very good. They have then threatened to arrest the proxy or impound the vehicle or threatened to arrest the driver at the time, which 9 times out of 10 is a client of the rental company who is not the offender and did not commit the offences that are sitting on the e-nature system. We don't believe that this is legal. What they do then is they will then either try and print out all the offences sitting on that particular vehicle registration and they will hand it to the client of our clients in their vehicles, in their personal capacity, and told them to please pay all the outstanding infringements. We've had cases of people fearing being pulled over in roadblocks. We had to drive to roadblocks with our representatives to beg the traffic officers to please understand that it was not that person sitting in the vehicle driving at that moment in time that committed those offences. Therefore, traffic officers also need to be educated on the R2 system and the R2 app. Surely if you are pulled over in a roadblock, it's not the vehicle that should be checked, it's the driver's ID number that should be running in the e-nature system. The cloning of number plates is a massive issue. I unfortunately do not have exact statistics that I can gather them for you. We have identified cloning of number plates, especially through the issuing of notices where there was a photograph in the notice showing a completely different vehicle to the actual registration papers on e-nature. Secondly, we do know of criminal activity whereby they will stand in yards, take down number plates, find a vehicle that looks relatively the same as that vehicle of a number plate, and unfortunately there are many number plate manufacturers that will simply make a number plate without any of those documentation. They will then put these number plates on vehicles that look similar, and we identify this through the movement of vehicles when an infringement is received. That vehicle is actually standing still at a depot that is an offence committed on it through speeding. This is a massive stress issue, specifically criminal activity. You mentioned and I think we have touched on it, the issuing authority's capacity to manage the volume. Do we not perhaps have a bombastic attitude that we hold back on nomination and only deliver a couple of thousand when and if we feel like it, knowing that we are going to block the issuing authorities from doing the work? We are not the people that issue the traffic fines in South Africa. We only deal with them and administer them as and when they come through our system. Our system is designed to print on a regular basis and we deliver on a regular basis once a week, if not twice weekly, to each issuing authority with the R207. This has come from an agreement on how they can handle the volumes that we do deliver. Question 4 was where the problem, the electronic system won't work because there's not compliance, institutions not collecting registered mail. If our clients receive the registered mail list that you collect, it is not in their nature or ours to hold back on any traffic fines. There is no reason to do so. We just want them to be sent to the correct offender. Once again, we mentioned the South African Postal Office being on strike, so we will negate notification of that registered mail at the Post Office. We've had situations operators mailing things to strange addresses that are not linked to that customer BRN number or property ID number. Their full account will not get notification of that R2 infringement. When drawing down on the e-native system, what information is sitting there and the addresses to which the infringement notices are being sent is different. We have brought this to the attention of the various authorities. Unfortunately, we have not had a response. The fifth question, why are our cleaners not changing their mode of behavior? I believe it's simply because they're not being held liable for their day job. If I continually feed, I'm never held liable for it by getting an infringement or a fine in my name, I will continue in that manner. If I'm pulled over in a roadblock and offered to pay to get rid of my feeding fines and not have a demerit point added to my driver's license, we'll take it. This needs to stop. The system needs to work. And that will change driver behavior. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Laura. Are there follow-ups? Okay,
thank you very much. Just a on my questions. But I think Madam just expect that there was a you're not getting your class. We will get into a class about this issue. So just bear with us on the questions. If the questions doesn't make a lot of sense to the first thing that you mentioned, the difficulty is this one of why does the authority need to see the contract? And you mentioned the administrative difficulties, that these things are run manual and they're sitting somewhere and to do it is going to be it's just a possibility. Now I'm sitting and I'm thinking, but who should do it? Who should do the compliance? Secondly, the compliance with the right to that administrative issue should not necessarily be an issue that is presented as a problem to an effect that is we are unable to do what we have to do. For an example, the company that will represent are massive companies. So any of their contracts, once you have your contract capture, they do have a soft copy of it. If they don't have a soft copy, that should be their problem. Because in many cases they do know, in preparing all these things, all the things we learned from them, there's a way of capturing it in their software for purpose of compliance. So if they feel that they don't want to do it and to put a software to be able to help them to do that, after all the contracts are all printed out of a machine or computer. So I'm just worried about these big difficulties, which is linked to Article 3 and jump to Article 10. So there's a problem there. Secondly, I just want to ask you this question, also in relation to Article 3 and the nomination of a judge. Do you think that the problem lies not with your client, but with someone else? For an example, nominations, I mean, this should be an administrative task. Any hired car has a driver behind the wheel, and that person has certified that you have all the necessary documents at the point of hire. So that information is available to that particular car or one of your clients. What is the struggle to say Leonard was a driver of this car when it hits 120 speed in this Nicomalan drive? What's the problem with that? Just explain it so that we understand what the problem is. Because this is pretty much just
sufficiently. That problem dragged over to Article 10. The judge should go to court. That is simply innocent. And you will help me to understand that is not for the subject. It sounds to me that there is a reason. Why do you think that you have difficulties as a concord to comply unless your questions are answered? For an example, you say, why do we need the conduct agreement? You're asking where the JPM and the Metro Police have outed, and they won't respond to you to that end. You can't comply because you have not responded, we're not receiving an answer. Because the reason people are asking this is because they want to see authenticity of the existence of a particular contract. Now, if you want to withhold this based on the question that has not been answered, but later jump into the Article 10, are they not in? How do you convince me that they're not in? Number two, you arguing that the client cannot pay fine for the driver they don't know. But they do know who the driver of that particular vehicle was on that particular day, because they have their dreams. In fact, when you sign that agreement, they tell you in the case of a client, X amount of money from this contract from your credit card will be taken away from this lieu of this particular fine at this admin cost. They say that to you. And they say that to me, and it actually happened. I'm not talking to you. Are you saying that the fact that on my credit card there was a deduction for a car hire, and it claimed that it was a speed test 70/60, and that is what went towards that particular fine? Are you saying it is not necessarily for a fine for administrative cost? And what is the separation between a fine and administrative cost rather than to the charge and car hire X? Because you intended that they can't pay for you. But they make sure that they just have a lot of money from you for that. Maybe you can explain that maybe someone is also taking someone's money illegally. So that it will clarify. You talked a lot about the failure of the authority. Maybe you will not explain that to me to understand it. And you mentioned an example of the box underneath the table. That there is a box underneath the table that is not directed. It told you that the reason you end up with 700,000 of elections to go to court, it is because those funds, those were not necessarily redirected or directed. Otherwise, we will say this one is quality for the Department of Traffic that should have reissued a fine to a driver A upon those submissions. But already the thing has been issued, already there is a fine already on the table. And the issue is just a nomination of the driver. So I'm just trying to find, I'm getting to understand that. Because if it's a capacity issue, there is no problem with the different story. It does not nullify the object that they have. It's a matter of the administration being implemented to make sure that it happens. So I will hand all cold water on the head on the basis that there is an administrative failure that happens in the office A or at the B. Then the last thing is this example that we just made of the roadblock and the roadblock and the car and the new driver and the founding of the vehicle. I don't know, we will probably just have to follow that issue up, because I think that there is a car, a registration number of the car, and there is a driver behind the car who is a different person to the previous person who drove, because
there is no relationship between the new driver, which is the new hire of the car, to the old hire of 3 months ago. There's no relationship between the two. And therefore, it cannot be that on the roadblock, the hire 90 days later is asked to make good what the driver paid on the 90 days ago. And that there is a problem there, because otherwise there is no relationship. In my understanding, there shouldn't be a relationship. And the issue of the car hire from the incumbent of the vehicle doesn't rise in something like this. I don't see how it arises. The incumbent of the vehicle happens under particular conditions. So if you look at the act in particular conditions, not the condition that you mentioned that somebody has been paid to pay fine and therefore not. I think that is quite a stretching this thing. Even if the public officer has done that, I think we would get to hear to this one to get a case of that nature. So rather than to just make that statement here. So I don't think there's truth. There's absolutely no relationship. I don't see how anybody can do it.
Thank you, Honourable. On the question about the rental agreement and the reason why the corporate clients don't want to hand that rental agreement over to the issuing authorities to attach the RTO 3, it's not a matter of compliance. We do comply 100% with the RTO 3. We've even gone as far to the issuing authority, as to the RTOA, as to the RTOC, simply that we will put the information on an affidavit. Now, the affidavit is as binding as a copy of the rental agreement, if not better. Even other affidavits have serious implications from a legal perspective. Now, the rental agreement contains sensitive and private information which belongs to the car rental industries. That's part of their database, that's part of their client's structure, that's part of their client information. On a lot of the rental agreements there are incredible details. So we are going to start issuing rental agreements to everybody with incredible details on. So from that perspective, there's private information on those rental agreements. But if we supply you with an affidavit, which is a lot stronger in court and in law, than a rental agreement. Why would the rental agreement be needed?
Insofar as the private information is concerned, can I just test this, sir, please? Again, I'm not in the class there yet. Any information that the party, both parties have signed to in relation to using the road, in compliance with the traffic, right? You're doing that, you know the car is going to be used on the road. So there has to be some compliance. Right? The information that you're asking there, you say you want the driver's license, because anyone who drives your car or your client's car must have got a driver's license. And that driver's license is put on that form. Right? And that's it. The credit, I think that's a red herring. Credit card details are red herring for me. There's no credit card details that would be used in a commission of the crime by an authority. What's the case? Has that been happening before? If we would say that is the case, then, but insofar as a compliance, when you refuse to submit information, that's a non-compliance. It has
doctor refuses to comply with that reasonable request in mediating or managing a particular matter. And that's why I say that that X and the effect of 3 and 10, to me, they align like means something on it. So just explain what is confidential being in the contract that I signed with the driver with the company. I don't see anything that's secret, top secret there that cannot be made available. Thank you.
Thank you. Right, I'm going to come back to the rent agreement. On the rent agreement, for example, take Avis's rent agreement, there's private and personal information on those rent agreements about the renter. Address details, phone number details, in instances of corporate companies renting. And we had a case in Cater, where we presented the rental agreements to a certain individual at the traffic department in Cater. Avis rental agreements. And they ended up in the hands of, at that time, a budget employee, where the officer from Cape Town Metro felt it was his goodwill to mail this information to budget chronicles. Now, on those information is the client's database. They have corporate clients, they have private, regular private clients, and then they have walking clients. So that's primarily the scope of the business, and then they have international. And this officer, in his wisdom, decided to send this to Buzz Rent-A-Car. Now you see why we say it's private business information, which must be protected. And my question back to you, sir, is what difference, and it's not a factor of non-compliance. Not what are they saying they don't want to comply? They just don't want to hand out their personal business information. They are saying they are happy to comply with all the driver's details in an affidavit, which the RTO7 is an affidavit. And they will appoint in the RTO7 with all the relevant details of that specific user. And that is contract.
Sorry, may I interrupt you? On the auto, it's in the driver's license number is also provided. So along with the traffic and ID number, there is the driver's license number that is also provided. The credit card fraud at its highest in South Africa at the moment. And once all these masses are captured on the e-nature system, we don't know what happens to all that paperwork. Is it filed in a secure environment? Is it left for anyone at all to that office review? And please understand, we're not saying that it's the issuing authorities that are potentially going to use those details. If an individual from the street calls them and obtains that information, repercussions could be disastrous. As we know, credit card fraud and credit card duplications are rife in South Africa at the moment. And I understand that you say it's not a concern. It's a big concern to our clients, because they have to adhere to the banking laws of South Africa. With response to your question on the money being taken off their credit card, the banking laws say that after termination of their rental, they only have 3 days in which to remove or deduct any further fees from their credit card. And they have to do it after 72 hours of cancellation or ending of that rental. Traffic nominations, for instance, come way after that, so they can't possibly suspect money from that renter, because they don't know at that time of termination that an infringement has occurred. You mentioned that you cannot take the fines that people they don't know. They do know who the drivers are. They do give that information so that those automobiles can be nominated to the correct driver. Can we not allow the driver to defend himself if he doesn't agree with that infringement? Why should a company pay for a traffic fine if you're not sure that it's A, wants to be defended in court, B, wants to be paid back in installments? Those are the auto acts and the provisions of that. I would not want anyone to pay a traffic fine on my behalf. It's my responsibility, and if I want to defend that in court, I should have that choice. just on the RA again, but don't he for 5 years accepted our arts to work in the nominations. For 5 years. No problem. We walked in the next day, no, now I want a copy of this and I want a copy of that and I want a copy of that. Now, for you in your mind and accepted, it's a near software thing. Majority of our clients are part of an international group. If they require software changes or system upgrades, it needs to be done internationally. They are not allowed to do their own changes in South Africa. It has to be done through their holding group. They join a queue. And are lucky if any of their software changes are addressed within 2 to 3 to 4 years at times. So that's why there needs to be standard operating procedures up front for RG. The query was on the fees and the difference between the admin fee and the fine fee that is deducted off your credit card and renting a vehicle. The car rental companies in their businesses charge an admin fee to manage the administration of a traffic fine. In no case on any terms and conditions do they say they'll actually pay for that fine should it be incurred. The admin fee is to manage the admin departments and the systems to identify the drivers. You asked, is the RTO 10 being issued because the issuing authority should have redirected the fine? Is it a capacity problem or is it just something being used by CANCOM and they are going through to RTO 10? My question mark is still unanswered then. Is it a capacity problem? Yes, if we do everything manually, it will be a capacity problem. When RTO is rolled out countrywide, and if you look at how many fines are issued on a monthly basis from every single metro around the country, will the issuing authorities be able to manage the RTO7 manually? Not only from us, from all the other infringers across the country. Will they be able to manage that? That is a serious capacity thing that needs to be looked at. Which is why we promote an electronic system. Because things can be done quicker, we can get to the vendor, and you'll be able to deal with the capacity. With regards to the roadblocks, and if you do require additional information on that, we do have all the details of the of that issue. And
just regards to the roadblocks, it has been stated to us in no uncertain terms in many meetings with some of the members that those roadblocks are held for one reason or one reason only, to collect money. But absolutely nothing to do with road safety. Nothing. No intentions of road safety. So however, to collect the money, they will go collect the money. So if it means intimidating the driver behind the wheel, that will be the process that we follow. And the stated to us in many meetings, like you mentioned names and places and dates here, that the roadblocks are helped to collect money. And that is the principle of operation of it. So if they stop the car, a rental car, they are going to try extort the money out of the person behind the wheel through threatening taxes. And it works. It works, but nobody wants to be locked up. So therefore we can make to the point that either the authorities must be trained correctly with R2 and the processes behind R2, or there must be good communication. But that is the fact of the roadblocks, and we experience this regularly. Thank you, sir.
Okay. I think from the interesting passages you have made about
and we are located in time of heaven. I would like to continue to debate with them. I don't see a point.
Okay.
They made their point, we should review them and invest into the next culture in their absence.
What will do? I just wanted people to get the issues out of this last response. There were issues that people believe they should be able to raise. We gave them up to 5:30, and definitely by 3:30 will be done. FTDG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson Ramona. I'll be very short, but I think this should be the ground that's still here, because some of the things that they do might not necessarily be consistent with the legislation, and I'm sure it's the version of the system, and again, continue to repeat that. Just a couple of issues. The Act's fullest directed to the older or the use of the vehicle, and by we are connected to the vehicle through the registration and the particulars that they provide to the inner system. Now, I think a colleague from CanCorp, I found in the middle, because it then represents the current part of the French system. And a roadblock, obviously, because we use a number plate recognition system. If a certain number plate gets recognized as having an infringement or a fine, it will be stopped. But it doesn't end there. They go to the truck or the vehicle, and then particulars are therefore verified, including the height of the person. And if that person, those things don't correspond, that person will never be defaced and I just want to make it very clear, roadblocks are not for making money. Roadblocks are there to also, in this instance, to check on people who infringe the law and continue to do so, and it's unadvised. So it's not collection, but is to follow up on people who are infringed. That's the main and key important thing. But the last one here, I mean, and I have indicated that the Act will always talk to the owner and or user of the vehicle, and we are connected via information onto the energy system. Now, if one of those things is the registration and it is free to second-hand company, I have received quite a lot of improvement notices in a couple of weeks of having used an Argus vehicle. Right. But then I think if the life of Argus then is another third party, and that's where particularly the delay, the miscommunication, everything else associated with this confusion comes in. But that has got nothing to do with us. We will stop or we will find a CanCorp vehicle if it is registered in the name of CanCorp. And if it is registered in the name of Avis, we'll follow up. Avis just came up. Unfortunately, this legislation does not have provisions like that that says that parties can be used to do things on our behalf. Now, the problems that they express are definitely not legislation problems, unfortunately. I just wanted to put out that very clear. But also, the danger of rushing to answer 10. Because it looks like the rights of CanCorp are actually encouraging their clients not to pay. Don't pay this thing, you don't have to do anything, go to after 10, because that gives you a faster way to go to court. And they know that in court, so either because of bad laws and all of those kind of things. Even, I found it very strange that the representatives at the highest level of the company can say to the committee, we have opted for after 10 in excess of 700, and even to the not with this pharmacist. Looks like somebody's heavy there to not comply with the laws, and I think it's very wrong.
Chairperson.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. One of the reasons I was right that we must continue because it is an election, but you can't let loose all the space of it. You see, one of the honorable members asked a question about what is the, would be the status quo if maybe the person from the international didn't pay his feedback or his treatment, whether it be the person stopped at the airport, whatever, whatever the point. But it's the correct one of undermining the time because of the rules of the country. I'll try to example. Some people, you see, it must be balanced. Even with us, people are traveling internationally, there is a system how it is with us. You pay here. Number two, I'll reflect an example. I always reflect that example. People must take South Africa as a right. It makes sense. You still restore RESF and RAF protection funds, whereby some of the people from international, they want cash. If they're involved in the NF, they created him to an extent from the accident. They want you to pay him foreign currency. Why this thing has happened here in South Africa? Why they were ripping us off? They were ripping us off. And after realizing that, we had some laws to protect us. The thumb is like ripping us off. Even with this case, in their own presentation, they are saying, you see, roadblocks they are waiting nothing, coincidentally, the pilot project of this roadblock, I mean, pulling up of the investments, was launched in Bumalana, whereby they put in a vehicle with a camera, even with local people, they stop them. Why is it talking of this? Why do we talk about compliance? You as a special people were saying that people, they don't comply, people, they don't do what. Okay, how do we enforce compliance then? People must be given an idea that, like what you said, Chief, that because I belong to an international company, I must do this thing, and I know that's trouble because I do. If there is a case, we must change laws to make sure that they pay for their sins. I see that call
for that. Well, yes. Really very time for you. Chef, I think it's not important that Chef came from must understand that the intention of the legislation is to, you know, prevent and reduce the threat as much possible as you can. At the same time, in fact, all those who are offenders must take responsibility. And we can't find ourselves why we are putting measures of making sure that people are complying with the law. Because the reason that, you know, we have these roadblocks, because people, they do not comply. And some of them are your clients who are not complying to these laws. Think the reason that we comply with these laws, they must be able to face the consequences. But it would be wrong that you must go out here having mentioned that. Actually, I think you must apologize to us. Because now you're taking your own decisions and your own lives. In this particular community, you cannot correct that roadblocks are meant to collect money. Because they even check whether the car is roadworthy and they give you a ticket there. They even check whether, you know, you comply with driver's license. So there are reasons that are happening there. They are also a measure to deal with issues of crime. And we can't run against story. Defending and protecting all our properties that, you know, one has invested in, when they go and pass there,
yeah,
they can use their house.
So you can come here in the portfolio court and say, roadblocks are meant to collect money. Don't worry. That's why I'm saying, take a chance. Sir, please, they must withdraw that statement.
Can you, before I allow the next speaker to engage, can you withdraw the statement?
Thank you, Jane. Yes, I can withdraw the statement. I have absolutely no problem with that, but we come here today to present the facts to this committee.
Normally what you should say is that I withdraw the statement without necessarily going into the merits and the demands. Please can please.
I withdraw the statement.
Thank you very much.
The simple question for me to Sancom is that the reason for information is requested, for example, you said on the contract there is a detail of the driver, the address, what is the person live, or what is the cell phone number, and what's the email address, and so on. Now, precisely that's what we need. In order to do the authentication of that, what you say is a driver, that information becomes important. So the question that I was having as I was thinking and recording, why are you refusing to make this information available? In fact, why are you in the middle of a compliance which is supposed to be complied by a car hire? This is why are you the middle person who are actually locking that every stage to comply? Because your action, this is basically you represent your client, obviously business, also the structures here. The models, all this wires and the decay and this question is generating income, to be generating income for company. But the key thing for me, why are you be the one that blocks the supply? Because you don't own the cars. They're not registered under Concord. The owner, in this case, is the English PTY, whether international or local. But in the case of South Africa, they will have to comply with South African law. And this is where the things are worried about. Why are you refusing that this information to supply? And then you turn around and say, because there has not been compliance here, we don't have that information. We're now running out of case. 5 o'clock the night before the deadline, you're submitting, we let you go to court out of 10. This is, that's why I'm saying, for me, can't be coincidental or something. It's simply a light chain of activities. That ends you there, that ends up there. So why is it that you cannot just submit this information? Why is it so difficult? Or why is measured three differently? Advise your client to submit this information in order for the right person to pay the fine. But once that information is submitted, the authority will know who that person was to arrive at that motor vehicle. Thank you.
Thank you. Firstly, I don't know where the presentation has gone wrong today, because I feel that there's a big misunderstanding here, a massive misunderstanding here. We have come today to present the reality of what's happening administratively on the ground every single day. That's what we've come to present here. The good and the bad. We do combine. We comply 110% to the R2 regulation. We do a successful redirection to the correct offender. And we have stated that over and over yesterday. We do comply. We comply as far as even saying that the driver's ID number into a private database to get his latest ticket address details to put on the R2 7 so we can get to the correct offender. And that is our whole and sole objective there. And we have not lied about one thing here today, as one of the honourable members. just alluded to. We do comply. We do send the information timely through to the issue authorities so that the issue authorities can redirect those infringements to the correct offenders. But that's the point that's not being listened to today. We only submit the RTK through a disparate process, because we are being held liable for an infringement or a criminal act for which we are not guilty. Now that is the point that we have been trying to make it say, if that is where the administrative failure lies, and you, I can show you minutes of meetings, as no lies we tell you. I can show you minutes of meetings where we are trying to engage everybody in the process. But the doors get closed on us all the time. So I ask you, honourable member, if I cannot redirect the traffic fine within compliance of the RTA regulation law, what am I left to do? What am I as a guilty or a not guilty person, let me just say, a not guilty person left to do? I did not commit the offence. Yet the issuing authority wants to hold me to that offence. What do I do? I'm asking for suggestion from you, please, sir. What is my next step? And we don't use the R210 as a last moment of process either. We don't do that. We only issue an R210 when all the doors have been constantly and the whole time shut on us. Nobody wants to deal with the problem. That's the problem here. And nobody wants to listen to the problem. Nobody is listening to that. There's a major, major administrative failure on R210. No one here wants to listen to it. The question I'm going to ask is what?
Break the law because somebody else has ability to do that. with the company. I cannot do their business. So some of the things that you said, there is an element of food in terms of benefit might not be said in this. And it's also the thing that you said, you said, they're not true. People come to APIA and there's certain ways of doing things. Those that we agree with, we see how we respect them. Those that we don't agree with, we don't agree. But that doesn't mean we must do them, because a company that is sitting somewhere in New York City cannot change systems of a company here in South Africa. Now APIA must change all these systems. We cannot do that.
Thank you
sir.
Thank you very much. The debate lively, that yesterday's debate very, very lively. We have to know it's good way. What we want to hear and discuss. Lies, truths, everything, assumptions and every other thing. We're going to sit here. In the end, what is more critical is that we should be able to come up with a law that we, at least the people of the Republic, to tell accidents. And make sure that people traveling in the roads of the Republic are safe. Thank you very much for the presentation. 3 minutes of a break while the Republic is making a preparation to make a presentation.
Yeah.